All right, welcome everybody to Blake and Greg's ACC SEC Weekly Wrap-Up Podcast. My name is Greg.
And I am Blake.
And we're doing something a little bit different this week because it's a little bit different kind of week. We're going to combine the ACC and SEC into a single solitary episode. Just by the way the nature of the thing works. A lot of ACC and SEC games this past week kind of makes sense to put them in one, don't you think, Blake?
I very much do. We have a lot of football to talk about. It was a fun weekend.
It was.
There were some games that weren't as fun as I thought they'd be, and then some that were really great. So, and then some that were just downright blow your brains out bad if you're a fan of certain teams. So, on that note,
foreshadowing.
On that note, let's roll into it, man.
All right, let's start with a game that was great, actually. The Commonwealth Cup. Virginia finally got the win over Virginia Tech, 39-30 was the final score, sending Virginia to the ACC championship game against Clemson this weekend. As we know, and as we've talked about many times, this means Virginia is the seventh Coastal winner in 7 years, and a pretty incredible feat, as we've talked about. And there were so many things that were on the line in this game, Blake, and they kept showing it too. Do you remember watching this game? They kept showing. First time in 15 years. First time. And by the way, 15 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, was Virginia Tech's first year in the ACC.
Yeah.
It was just really interesting. So first time in 15 years, first time to go to the Coastal Championship or to win the Coastal, excuse me. There were a couple other things too, like significant factors. But this is a big game, obviously, and Virginia came away with the win. 39-30 was the final score. And what I liked most about this game, and I'm sure you did too, was how back and forth it was. We both love games where momentum shifts repeatedly.
Absolutely. The back and forth was great. The crowd was really good.
Yes. And they were on watch, too. We put them on watch last week.
Yep, we did, and they showed up. I'm sure they listened to this podcast.
All of them,
All of them did, and I don't know if Tony Bennett was in the stands. I didn't see him if he was there, but they could have been playing ball somewhere. But, no, it was a great crowd. It felt like a big-time game. You know, some games have that big-time feel, and some don't, and you wouldn't expect this game have that big game feel necessarily, but it really did. I was really impressed. Back and forth game. The ebb and flow was great. Players had great individual performances in this game, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, legendary, I might add, for Perkins from Virginia. It was a fantastic game, and the very last score was kind of the icing on the cake if you're a Virginia fan. To win it like that, you know, to get the strip safety, I mean, the strip touchdown.
Right.
To seal it, I think it was kind of, if you're a fan, that's kind of what you would really, it's a really cool way to end the game, I think. I mean, if you're frustrated, lost 15 years in a row, and you finally get that win, the monkey off your back, and you do it in that way, that was really cool. And, hey, look, I picked Virginia. So I was very fortunate to have the seventh, but actually I picked them because they would be the seventh team in 7 years.
Yeah.
And the Coastal,
yeah,
that's how the Coastal rolls. The most exciting division in college football, period. Is it the best division? Of course not, but it is the most exciting. And I mean, to have that kind of game decide the most exciting league in football makes perfect sense to me.
The most unpredictable, the most chaotic. And there are a few instances of that actually that we'll get to, but yeah, you mentioned Perkins. It was pretty fantastic, actually. Because,
oh, my God. His numbers were off the charts. Greg.
Yeah, 19 carries for 164 yards, 2 touchdowns, including a 67-yard touchdown run.
Yep.
And then he was 20 for 33 throwing for 311 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 pick. Dude's responsible for 475 yards total offense. And what was interesting, Blake, was he sort of was tearing them up early on, and then Bud Foster made some adjustments and kind of contained them, and then he kind of came tearing back again in the second half. Blake, Virginia had a 13-point first quarter, Virginia Tech had a 21-point third quarter, and Virginia had a 19-point fourth quarter. That's the definition of an ebb and flow game.
And that's the definition of a Coastal game.
Yes.
That is it. If you're a football fan and you like – if you're crazy like we are, which I would think we're both kind of college football crazy. I think we can both admit that.
Yeah.
This kind of game and this kind of vision is kind of why you watch. I mean, it's incredible to me. I guess it's incredible to me, Gray, that it came down to this game, and this game delivered when so many times in these big games they don't deliver. You know what I mean? This game did deliver. So hats off to both teams. I thought Justin Fuente had the guys ready. I thought that Bud Foster, like you said, adjusted, did a great job adjusting. But I guess Virginia readjusted, I guess.
Yeah.
Did a fantastic job there. But you said Perkins had 475 yards of offense.
Yeah.
As a team, they had 492. That is incredible.
Yes.
Think about that one. Now, this one guy, the only guy that ever had nothing to do with Perkins who had yards
the guy's name is Talapapa, but his first name is Wayne. That's like it's like Dennis Castro, right?
Yeah. I saw a sign in a town near us that says Don's authentic Italian food.
Don. No, this is a great game. And the final score, don't let the final score fool you if you didn't watch this game, because it was accentuated at the end with a strip touchdown in the end zone.
The icing on the cake play at the end of the game.
Right. Yeah. And the fans could sort of smell blood anyway, because Virginia had to go all the way down the field. And they were backed up, obviously, on their own, one-yard line or so.
Yeah, way back.
And the fans could already sort of smell blood. It was a tall task for Virginia to be able to come back and even kick a field goal to win it. But Virginia Tech ended up getting the strip in the end zone and sort of putting the exclamation point on the win. And it was really exciting. One of my favorite moments from the weekend, actually, was seeing the fans storm the field. Because it'd been so long, you know, it's been such a big deal to these fans. 15 years is a long time to lose to your rival. So I really enjoyed seeing that. I don't have any skin in the game either way. I would have been fine with Virginia Tech winning, whatever. But I do like seeing the jubilation from the fans, you know.
Yeah, and I like seeing a team who hasn't done it in a while do it. I think that's pretty special. And if you're a Virginia fan, you just won a national championship in basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
You won the Coastal Division, and you won a baseball championship a few years ago, too, pretty recently. So athletically, if you're a Virginia fan, you got to feel pretty good about your school.
That is true.
I mean, they won a national championship in football, but to win your division for the first time ever, I think, as far as the Coastal goes.
It is, first time.
And because they haven't had success like this since George Welch was coach. And that's been a long time ago. So, yeah. Congrats, Virginia. Job well done.
Yep. All right. Let's talk Georgia and Georgia Tech. We don't have to talk about this game for very long. By the way, we both did pick Virginia with the outright win. So nicely done there. But we did not pick this game correctly. The line was 28, and we both thought Georgia Tech would give Georgia just a little bit of a tougher game than they did. Final score 52-7, so they obliterated the Vegas odds. Yep. This is just, I don't know what you can say about this. Georgia's just a lot better, and I didn't think they'd quite flex on Georgia Tech like they did, but they did.
Yeah, Georgia, the one time they picked to blow a team out, I picked.
Right.
You know what I mean? I picked Tech to cover.
Yeah.
So screw Georgia, frankly. Look, Georgia, who knows? They kind of got the ball rolling, and Tech had a hard time moving the ball on them. Georgia just ran downhill and got a big win. I didn't watch much of this game because, frankly, it was kind of a blowout early. Not a blowout.
Well, sort of. I mean, this game was 17-7 at half.
It was a half. Yeah. I know it was that close to the half. But they kind of blew it open in the second half, obviously.
Definitely.
But, yeah, I didn't watch much of it. And I'm glad I didn't, I guess, now. But I don't have much to say about this game. But just, look, Georgia's a really good team. Are they elite? I don't think so, but they're really good. Georgia Tech, look, bad year. You're glad it's over with. But I saw signs to be encouraged for the future if you're a Georgia Tech fan.
I agree. Yeah. All right, let's talk Syracuse beating Wake 39-30. And what's strange, you don't see this very often, Blake, but an overtime game with a 9-point margin of victory.
Yep, that would be a pick six or a scoop and score when you kick a field goal. That
yes, You don't see that very often, but that's exactly what happened. I thought this was actually my lock of the week, and I was wrong about this. Wake was favored by 4.5. I said to myself, you know, Wake's a good team. Syracuse is not very good. I don't care if it's in the Carrier Dome. 4.5 just doesn't seem like much enough to me. You agreed. But what we didn't know is that Jamie Newman would end up being hurt. Getting hurt in this game.
Yeah. And Wake's decimated with injuries, by the way.
Yes, they're walking wounded, and Jamie Newman was about the only thing holding that team together, I think, at this point. Yeah. He ended up getting hurt early. This other kid came in. Hartman played decent, not as good as Newman is, and also just doesn't have a whole lot of guys to throw it to anyway, based on injuries and just general attrition that's happened with Wake Forest. Syracuse, on the other hand, we saw some sparks from Syracuse, and, of course, ended up sending this game to overtime. Syracuse kicked a field goal with their possession, and then it was a pick six, I believe. Was it a pick six or was it a fumble return?
I didn't see that. I can't remember
what it was. One or the other, but because I remember thinking, you know, I knew I had Wake given the 4.5, and when it went into overtime, I thought, you know, Wake could score a touchdown and keep Syracuse out of the end zone. I might get this, and then Syracuse ends up winning by 9. Which is unthinkable in overtime, but they do.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about this, I think, last week about Wake Forest, that, you know, their starters are pretty good, but, you know, once they have – I mean, they don't have the depth that a lot of teams have, and once they get injured and have to go to the bench, they have a lot bigger drop-off than a lot of teams do.
Yes.
And I think you saw that as the season played out. So Wake Forest, you know, start off – look, this is a team that was ranked at one time. Totally fell off, but they fell off because of injuries, and you hate it for them. But teams like Wake Forest, a lot of times, they start off a lot better and end up going down, you know, I guess you kind of see regressing towards the end of the season because of an injury issue or multiple injury issues. And that's what happened to them this year. You know, but they're still going to a bowl game, and hopefully they'll be a lot healthier then.
Yep, Wake moves to 8-4, which is a pretty solid solid year for Wake, and Syracuse 5 wins, so they miss out on a bowl, but at the same time, you know, it's crazy, Blake, because Syracuse was preseason ranked.
Yeah, I know.
Were they like 23rd or something? And we thought, well, there's probably going to be a drop-off since they lost their quarterback, but, you know, Babers will have them playing well, and never really clicked for them this year.
We underestimated the loss of Eric Dungy.
Yes.
But you know, it's kind of funny, Greg. We had two scores, 39-30.
I know. I noticed that. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's move on. By the way, it was a pick six in overtime.
Pick six.
Yeah.
All right.
I knew I remembered it. I couldn't.
What channel was that on? Do you remember?
I think it was ACC Network.
See, I don't get that anymore because my cheap ass, after the season, I'm asked to stream my TV, and I didn't want to pay for a full month of actually YouTube TV because I was like, if I pay for a full month, I'll just see it for a week. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I dropped it and got Sling. I didn't get the sports package because I'm cheap. And the package I had does not include the ACC Network, so I could not watch that game. But it is what it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a fun game. It was fun.
I was glad I had a chance to see it, but, you know. I went on the cheap.
But I'm guessing you're okay with missing this next game, even though it turned out pretty interesting. That is Duke and Miami. Duke ends up winning 27-17. Miami was an 8.5-point favorite. I stupidly took Miami to win and cover. You took Miami to win, but you got Duke with the cover. Blake, you could have gone and watched this game for less than a month of ACC Network would have cost you. And I checked because I thought about it, actually. I thought, you know...
Yeah, I mean, how much were tickets?
Well, on StubHub, they were $5.
Oh, my God.
So that means you can
walk up and get them for $2?
Well, that means you can walk up and get them for $5 all day long. And like I said, I've walked up before and been handed tickets for free, just people don't need them, whatever. And that's probably what this game would have been if I'd gone. Nevertheless, Duke ends up with the win. This was surprising to me because Duke was sitting at 4 wins before this game. I thought maybe they wouldn't have much to play for. Miami, on the other hand, I thought maybe they'd be looking for some redemption after getting blown out by FIU the previous week.
Miami's a train wreck.
They are a train wreck.
Fire is bad. And once again, if you're – and I mean, Duke's down this year a little bit, but they're a decent team. Would you say mediocre? Maybe.
Maybe.
Miami – dumpster fire. They just, I don't know what you do down there, Greg. Look, if you're Miami, you should not lose to Duke, FIU, or Georgia Tech right now. Georgia Tech, you know, you shouldn't lose to those teams. And they did. But this is the same team that went to Florida State and won by 17.
That's
so
true.
I mean, go figure them out. But no, it's a bad team. Manny Diaz, first year there, not impressed. Miami has got to figure this out. They've got to do this. They have got to get out of this nonsense of thinking they have to play a pro-style offense. That, look, it's not 1999 with Eric Dorsey and Frank Gore. It's not 1987 with Vinny Testaverde and those guys. It's a different era. Move into the 21st century. LSU finally did it. Look what happened to them.
Yeah, we called for that for years, and they finally turned the page.
Miami, for the love of God, Manny Diaz, go get a guy. Go get it. I mean, and it doesn't have to be a great, like, you don't have to go get Art Briles or Chip Kelly. Go get somebody who runs a spread in a modern day spread. Do something different. What you're doing is not working. They have a culture problem too, but this would be a quicker fix than I think culture issues can take years to fix. This is a quicker fix. If they went and did that, they'd improve two or three games next year by just doing that. But, you know, they think they got to run the pro sets and the nonsense offense. I don't understand it, man. I don't get it. But, hey, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not a Miami fan.
And you reminded me because you said they beat Florida State by 17, and I had to go back and look. That's true, 27-10. And I'm looking at the rest of their record, Blake. They also beat the Coastal champions, Virginia. They beat Pitt. And they beat Louisville 52-27.
Yeah.
Then turned around and got beat by FIU and then beat by Duke. Now they're sitting at 6-6, which probably puts them square in the what? Not Belk Bowl, maybe Belk Bowl.
Wait, what's their record?
6-6.
6-6, Miami doesn't travel, so Sun Bowl.
Nah, that's a good one.
What's the one they play? The one in Yankee Stadium? I can see them going there.
The Bronx Bowl or whatever?
Yeah,
Pinstripe Bowl.
Yeah, Pinstripe Bowl. Maybe the Armed Forces Bowl, but I kind of doubt that because I think they want, frankly, I'm not sure they want those guys up there for the Armed Forces Bowl, Miami players. It's not the best bunch out there. But so, I mean, the Pinstripe Bowl or the Sun Bowl is my pick.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Send those guys to El Paso. That's where they need to go.
By the way, that's funny you said it. But anyway, by the way, I did want to give a shout out to UNC Charlotte. And their coach, whose name is Healy, I always remember that because Pat Healy, one of the great characters in cinematic history. But they're going to a bowl for the first time in program history, Blake. And you know what bowl they're going to?
What's that?
The Bahamas Bowl.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, so that's fantastic. Because, man, you know, when you're in the running for the Bahamas Bowl, that means you're also normally in the market for or in the running for whatever the Detroit Bowl is, the Motor City Bowl or whatever. Normally, you know, they always show on the selection shows, they always show the teams. Yeah, when they show the teams that get to the Bahama Bowl, they go crazy because they don't have to go to Detroit. They get to go to the Bahamas. Yeah. So right, hats off to UNC Charlotte. That dude's going to be a big name.
Are you a closet UNC Charlotte fan?
I am. I like this guy, actually. I like him. He's
I don't know anything about him.
He's a former Richmond Spider. He was there when they won the national championship in like 07 or so.
Was he head coach or coordinator?
He was a quarterback.
Oh, okay.
And he's head coach now. I believe this is his first gig. He's an energetic guy, brings a lot of passion. Young guy.
Does he throw the boat part too?
I don't know that he's that. I don't know that I think he's sort of in that vein, but he's a likable guy. And he's experiencing success very early at a program that's, you know, very fresh, very new. And so I think he's going to be a big name, big hire in a year or two if he continues that level of success.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
So let's move on. Let's talk BC and Pitt. Man, this you want to talk about it. Pitt is as schizophrenic as anybody.
Oh, they fit in perfect that division.
The final score 26-19. The line was 9.5. We both picked Pitt to win, but we both picked Boston College to cover that. So we end up both getting a little backdoor cover there.
Yep.
26-19, which puts Boston College. Hey, Boston College is bowl eligible. Pitt 7-5. The strange thing about this is Boston College wins and becomes bowl eligible, and then the school turns around and fires Addazio. So that's that's a little unusual, but you know.
It is, but I guess they'd had enough. I mean, I don't know where – I don't know what you – BC's a tough job.
It is.
Because it's not a
pro
big town. Recruiting base.
Yeah.
It's a pro town, private school. It's not an easy job. The fan support's not that great. I mean, Charlie's a great fan, and I'm not saying that – look, there's some great fans out there, no doubt about it. But overall, it's in a pro town, not a great recruiting base. Tough gig. I think you got to find – I almost think that's the kind of job that you kind of roll with what Duke did with Cutcliffe.
If you can find a guy like that,
yeah. If you can find you a guy that's coached before, been through the Power Five hell you go through with recruiting everything and wants a job where he wants to coach but not be – stressed out, maybe 24/7. Problem is, too, you're in Boston. A lot of guys don't live in Boston. It's cold. It's different up there. High tax state. You know, I don't know where you go for your BC for coach. I almost think you try to get Doug Flutie. And I know that sounds crazy, but get Doug Flutie and let Doug Flutie put guys around him that want to coach for a Doug Flutie. And this is an out-of-the-box hire. But you need somebody to kind of galvanize your program. Galvanized BC like Doug Flutie ever. I was a kid around that time. Doug Flutie won the freaking Heisman Trophy at Boston College. I mean, he's a legend. And I love the guy, and I'm not going to lie. He was a hero when I was a kid. But he's a 5'9 guy, and he played the pros forever, played the CFL, NFL, has big name recognition. He might be able to actually get some recruits that normally guys wouldn't get because of who he is. Now, I know they say, well, the kids don't know who he is because he's, Doug Flutie played in the 80s.
I think kids know who he is.
I hope so. If they don't, show him film. I mean, because the guy was incredible, and I think they need somebody to galvanize the program. And I don't know who else it could be besides somebody like a Doug Flutie. I think he'd be good. I think it makes sense because he'd be going home. He loves the school. He's a Boston. I think he's a Boston guy. I don't know where he's from, but he's from somewhere up there,
By the way,
let Doug run the show.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I just heard on the radio, maybe Tuesday, a couple days ago, that Flutie Flakes are coming back because it's been 20 years since Flutie Flakes were released.
And so, I still have my box of Flutie Flakes, by the way.
So Flutie Flakes are actually coming back for a limited time only if you want to pick up some Flutie Flakes, which I might do, actually.
I might. Now, is it going to be for sale down here or just up in that area?
That I'll have to look into. They just mentioned that they were going to re-release them for a short amount of time. That's all I heard.
I had a friend that he was from Buffalo, and his girlfriend bought me a box of Flutie Flakes, and I started that box today. If I can find another box, I may have to eat a bowl of those old Flutie Flakes from 1999.
I don't think I'd do that. I think I'd just hang on to those. I think I'd.
It might be just aged perfectly.
Much like the man himself. Speaking of Charlie, we gave him a shout out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We hadn't heard from him, and he said, "Thanks for the shout out. I've been listening, but I've been both busy and disappointed with BC. So I haven't sent you anything." And he said, "I'm a little surprised the Jesuits," I like that he refers to Boston. "I'm a little surprised the Jesuits cut Addazio loose after earning a bowl bid. But as I said earlier in the season, it's probably time for a change. That said, I like the guy too much on a personal level to cheer his departure. He's a stand-up guy who fits the school's football ethos well." Nice word, Charlie, ethos. "And he inherited a disaster left by the Spaz and promptly returned the school to respectability." And he said, "We'll see who this coaching search turns up. Haven't got a clue where they'd even start, to tell you the truth, but I'm hopeful." Appreciate the note, Charlie. Glad you're okay.
Thanks, Charlie. And yeah, of course you're glad he's okay because Charlie's a great guy. And he makes a great point here. A New England local would be a plus. I agree 100% with that. I think that's a great point. A local, somebody that the fans can rally behind, somebody who's one of them. It always helps to have one of your own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it would make sense. But, yeah. Charlie, I hope you guys get a good coach, man. I really am pulling for you. I have nothing against BC. And I'd love to see you guys contend for Atlantic Division championships tomorrow if you could.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then let's wrap up the week in the ACC, at least as far as the home teams are concerned. Let's talk UNC spanking NC State. 41-10 was the final score. UNC was favored by 8, and we both picked UNC to win and cover. Mm-hmm. And Blake, this game was 10-6 NC State at halftime, but the second half was a much different story than the first half. I don't know if it was necessarily a sort of a scheme change, or if, you know, this was kind of a sloppy day. Yeah. A little rainy. I don't know if the rain sort of held out in the second half and North Carolina was able to throw the ball a little better. Because I know in the first half it was tough going on for both offenses. And then the second half, UNC put up 35 points in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, definitely a tale of two halves. UNC comes away with a big win. I know you watched part of this game, right?
I did. And UNC, look, they're a far superior team right now. And UNC's not, look, they're... they got a ways to go, but you see things with this team. Look, I think they're the coastal favorite in 2020. They're a young team, a lot of talent, like their coaches. Mac Brown's come in and done what he has to do. He's put guys around him who are very good, and Mac is already recruiting very well. UNC's already passed State. State's, you know, you have Dave Doran there. I just don't know. I never liked the guy as a long-term answer, and I still don't. I think for NC State, I think you give him one more year, and if he doesn't happen next year, you run him off and get somebody else.
Yeah.
And you got to win. Look, State plays nobody out of conference usually every year. It's just typically, I think they played West Virginia this year, but typically it's nobody. And they go win 4 conference games, go 8-4, win 3, go 7-5. They need to go 8-4 next year, Greg.
Yes.
In my opinion. And if they don't, go get somebody else.
Yes, 4-8 this year. And Blake, I read somewhere, I don't know how true this is, but I read somewhere that they had the easiest Power 5 schedule in the nation. And it doesn't surprise me when you consider not only the shape of the ACC as a whole, but also their out-of-conference is hot garbage, Blake.
Yep, it was.
East Carolina, Western Carolina, they did play West Virginia, by the way, lost, and then Ball State.
And that's a down team this year, West Virginia. They're down.
And they got kind of beat. 44-27 was the final score.
Yeah, they kind of spanked them, yeah.
And Ball State. So, and it's also weird. NC State tends to do this where they front load their schedule with all their out of conference, and they're usually cupcakes, as we know.
Yep.
And all four were the first four games: Eastern Carolina, Western Carolina, or East Carolina.
And they do that
Western,
almost every year.
Yeah, West Virginia, and then Ball State, and then the last part of their schedule is just all league play. Yeah, Blake. They lost to Florida State, which that says a lot too. And it was 31-13, which is pretty decisive. They beat Syracuse by 6 points. We remember that because that was a Thursday night game. And then they lost every game since then. And a lot in spectacular fashion, including this past one. North Carolina is just a better team. We both kind of saw this coming.
Yeah.
NC State's a team that's struggling with attrition, what they've lost. Also struggling to sort of find an identity post-Finley, to be quite honest. Haven't really found a good replacement at quarterback yet. I don't know if they will. I've heard Bentley's name thrown around as a possible transfer.
I think it's possible.
Location.
I've heard him out west, though. That's what my – I'm not going to say my sources like I'm some kind of insider guy. I'm not. But the things I've heard from people who were in the know say Jake's heading west. So, I don't know.
Well, so Blake, you were 4-2 against the spread this week, which puts you at 46-36 on the year. Nicely done.
All right.
And I was 3-3, which oddly enough puts me at 41-41, right? Even 500. Yep. Flip a coin, Blake. It's exactly the same as my picks.
That's tough to do to go 500 on the year.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to do.
Not as tough as 46-36, but yeah. I take a lot of pride in going 500 in the ACC. All right, Blake, let's talk Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame. Right. Who do you got?
Let's do it. Okay. Hall of Fame. I've got, is his name Bryce Perkins?
Yes.
Bryce Perkins. The game he had to have 475 of 492 yards or whatever your team's offense and to lead them to their first division title in their history. That's pretty incredible. When I had a brain fart, Greg. Yeah, when you saw the Hokies start to make their comeback,
yeah,
Bryce Perkins didn't panic. He stayed true to himself. And he's not a guy who panics. He's a very cool customer. And he didn't panic like, you know, because we talked about the ebb and flow of this game. It looked like the momentum was turning and turning and turning. And you wonder when it turns like that for a team that's lost 15 in a row, how does it affect them mentally? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot of times it does. And for him, it didn't. He kept leading them and kept making plays. And he's really had a really under the radar great career.
Yeah, actually he has.
Credit for that. And he'll always be remembered forever as the guy who led them to their first division title. Mm-hmm. So for that, I mean, to have 97% of your team's total yards, Bryce Perkins.
Fair.
For me.
Very fair.
What about you?
I gotta go with North Carolina and specifically Mac Brown.
Ah, all right.
Blake, I gotta admit. It's funny because I get reminders about, you know, like social media posts and things like that.
Yeah,
yep. So the other day I had one from a year ago where I was making fun of UNC for hiring Mac Brown. And I gotta admit, I'm not saying he's a long-term solution. Nobody's saying that. But the guy has done a lot better in his first year than I thought he would. Here UNC is, not only are they going to a bowl at 6-6, and based on what happened the previous year, were they 2-10? That's a big improvement over the previous year. And also, to put the cherry on top of the regular season with a blowout defeat of your sort of crosstown rival at their place, 41-10. Now, I will say this. Some of it does have to do with stumbling into having the second-best quarterback in the conference. I think we can agree on that. Nobody saw him coming. But at the same time, I like what I'm seeing out of UNC. As you mentioned, they're probably the coastal favorite next year, assuming everybody stays healthy, assuming there's nothing unforeseen happens. I got to give it to Mac Brown and UNC for what they've done, what they've done this season, and particularly this past weekend too. Okay. But I also have an honorable mention, if this is okay.
Okay, sure.
You didn't see this game, but Syracuse's crowd, I got to give it to them.
Okay.
It was loud in there, Blake. And I'm looking, and it wasn't even close to full. Probably 30-40% full, but it was loud towards the end of that game.
Really?
Yes, it was loud. And I don't know, maybe it was shenanigans in the truck, you know, where they're messing with the audio levels. I don't know, but it seemed very loud. It seemed like the fans were very raucous, and it kind of struck me because why would you get so crazy about a four and seven team coming into this game? Like why get that excited about it? I don't, you know, but they were.
I don't know. That is strange, but good for them for being loud and proud, man.
Yeah, no, and it was actually pretty impressive how loud they were. So honorable mention, Syracuse, their crowd at least.
I like those, and I will say I agree with you. Great picks, but I would say Sam Howell is the best heterosexual quarterback of the ACC. Sorry about that.
Nice qualifier there.
That low blow.
Ew, not to me.
Okay, all right. All right,
Blake, Hall of Shame. Who deserves more shame than they're getting this week?
Oh, God, Dabo freaking Sweeney.
All right, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Yes, Dabo Sweeney. Because Dabo Sweeney, I get what he's doing. He didn't have to do this, though, but I get what he's doing. He's full of crap. What he's saying, he's trying to get his fan base united, which they already are, Dabo.
Correct.
You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
He's trying to get his team motivated, which you don't have to do that. They clearly already are. But I think part of this is, Greg, I think he is a little bit frustrated, him being the center of attention like he always is, that Ed Orgeron's taking some of that shine off him this year, because Ed is a more likable guy because he is real. Dabo Sweeney, to me, great coach, done a fantastic job, one of the best coaching jobs you'll ever see. It's unconventional, but he's kind of written a blueprint, in my opinion. Mac Brown did it before him, but not as effectively. But he's kind of written a blueprint, done a fantastic job. But this whining about, oh, we lose, they're begging for us to lose games so they can drop us to 10. And I have to agree with Paul Feinbaum what he said. He said he's a whiner, and he is. He's a whiner. And I don't think there's a reason behind it. I don't think he's whining to why there's a reason behind it. But he does whine, and I think he's a little bit insecure that he's not getting the love as far as the you know, people's choice of like, hey, I like that guy over there. This year said Orgeron getting
that
love.
That's a weird take.
And I think that's really bothering him because he likes to be the most loved guy out there. But I think he's a little bit frustrated that he's not this year.
I would not have gotten that.
That's my opinion. That's true or not, but it's my opinion because Ed's got a lot of love this year in Ed Gold Tigers. You know, Ed's a different guy.
True.
He's more gruff. He's more out front. He's more real. Dabo's the salesman. Jolly gosh, G or whatever he says, you know, the Mayberry kind of guy. You know what I mean? It's kind of how his persona is kind of like that. But I just think he's a little bit shaken that maybe he's not getting the love and media attention he's used to getting.
I don't know about that, but I will say this.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Well, maybe not, but I will say this. First of all, Bill agrees with you. Bill put Dabo in his hall of shame. He says, great coach, great team, big freaking crybaby. And I'll say this. Yeah. Here's my response to this. Dabo is absolutely putting it on for calculated purposes. Absolutely, yes. He is. But he's not entirely wrong. And I'll say why. And I didn't know this, but this sort of does galvanize a little bit what he said. Now, I don't think that there's this big conspiracy to get Clemson out like he let on. He said, they want us out, blah, blah.
He doesn't think that either.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. But that's the whole thing. He doesn't. What he's doing is, like you said, he's galvanizing the fan base. But actually, more importantly, he's giving the players extra motivation. And that's what he's – Blake, he's the motivator in charge or in chief.
Exactly.
That's what he is. He's the CEO. He's the motivator in chief. That's what he is. But I will say this. And you may not believe this, but Clemson is the only preseason number one team in the history of the AP poll since 1936 to fall to number three by the end of the year despite winning every game they played. The only one ever. Mm-hmm. So there is a little bit of truth in what Dabo's saying, but not to the extent that it's this conspiracy that everybody wants Clemson out. But
give me a break. And of course, he doesn't believe that. He's laying on thick for his fans and his team.
Right.
I agree with that. But it's not his fault. I will never blame Clemson for this because I've never blamed Clemson for this. The ACC is really bad. And they're in that league, and they don't have the big-time wins. And that's why they dropped. And that's it. I don't have an issue with it because they haven't. It's not their fault. But because of just forces beyond their control, they're playing teams that they're a lot better than. And they're a lot better than a lot of teams. But they're playing a lot of teams that can't even challenge them. And I think LSU's had better wins.
Sure.
And Ohio State's had better wins.
Yeah, I agree.
Better schedules. It's not his fault. It's not Dabo's fault at all. I don't have any problem with their schedule because you know, out of conference, they play A&M and South Carolina. And
usually Notre Dame or somebody else too, or a Georgia or an Auburn or whatever.
Well, they play one SEC school typically, and South Carolina's what they do.
Yeah.
And I have no issue with that because look, if you're a coach, you're trying to win a national championship. If it were me, I'd want the path of least resistance. Sorry, I would. Is it exciting? No, but I don't care. I'm trying to win. That's what he's trying to do.
So you'd go the NC State route with scheduling.
Not to that level.
That's little resistance.
But I would go, I would play one Power Five school and three either, you know, Group of Five schools or maybe even a 1AA school mixed in there if it's an in-state school. That's what I would do. I have no issue with the schedule. It's not his fault the schedule's bad, but it is. And they drop because it's just not a good schedule.
No, but it's
a thing, huh?
It's a perfect storm for Dabo. See, that's the thing. That you and I think we've watched Clemson, we've watched Dabo enough to sort of see this, and maybe other people see this too. But to give you an example, Blake, when the initial playoff rankings came out, however many weeks ago, 6-7 weeks ago, the first ones, you know, which we don't care that much about the rankings, but they came out, and do you remember where Clemson was in that first ranking?
Yes.
Fifth. And I remember my wife, who knows nothing about football, she said, wait a minute, how come Clemson's number five? Aren't we undefeated? And I said, yeah. And she said, we won the national championship, right? And I said, yeah. She said, well, why are these other teams ahead of us? And I said, number one, it doesn't matter. You know, these are meaningless. Number two, this is the best thing that could ever happen to Dabo because now he's got a rallying point. He's got something to get his team to rally behind. Yeah.
And that's where he's best.
And that's where he's best, and that's what he's using. So, of course, and then only moving up to third, and you've got Georgia right behind you who lost to South Carolina, whereas Clemson's undefeated. Perfect. A rallying point. Dabo will find them. It's all calculated, and that's who he is. And, yeah, he's going to make some enemies along the way, but Dabo doesn't care because that's what the team, at least that's what he thinks the team needs. So, yeah, but I do wonder I do wonder people like Bill and people like you fight between Dabo and Finebaum. Who do you want to win?
I just want both of them to get bloodied.
Yeah.
but you know what? I guess this is what this bothers me too. Dabo says he's whining and complaining, being a crybaby. But just a couple weeks ago, he said, hey, this is great. I don't have to motivate my team at all.
Right.
Because the polls are motivating us, but now they're not motivating you. I think part of this, too, is, Greg, part of this, in my opinion, is Dabo also is planting a seed just in case Virginia beats them Saturday.
Which is smart.
But he is planting that seed to say, because he said they want to lose, they want to sit 10th. If something were to happen, and you never know. I don't think they lose, but you never know. They lost Syracuse. They've lost to Pitt. It could happen. If they were to lose, then he's planting the seed. Hey, watch them drop us out of the top four. And challenge them. That, you know, what he's saying is challenging the committee. Hey, look, Georgia's lost one. If we lose one too, are you really gonna bump us behind Georgia?
Yeah, we lost to the division champ, and Georgia lost to a team at home that we went on the road and beat. Yeah, I know. I totally agree.
I think that's part of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, to say Dabo is a whiner, I don't think it's whining. It comes across as whining, sure, but man, it's calculated. Now, whether you agree
it's whining. He's whining. It's just calculated whining.
Yeah, but it's not whining for the sake of whining. Like you said, it's whining for
I don't care what
manipulation
is.
Yes. Well, I think
whining. I don't care what it is. I mean, he's still whining.
I know you don't.
But I mean, he's just whining. He's whining for a reason. It's definitely calculated, but it's still whining.
Sure. No, I get it.
I mean, I get, part of me gets why he does it. But because I don't like the guy, I say I don't like the guy. I don't really like the guy. I actually like his wife a lot. I don't like him that much. Because he's too much of a salesman for me. You know that. He blah, blah, blah. You know, woe is me. He gets on my nerves. But I'm not going to deny the fact that he's a fantastic coach. The job he's done at Clemson is miraculous. And he's done it with a totally different approach than most teams do. He's kind of set the bar. I mean, for a guy to go take a job and do what he's done at Clemson and to make the hires he's made and to keep his staff intact, that is not easy. When you win, that's almost impossible. And somehow he's done it. Now, how? I don't know. Don't know. But, I mean, I get money's part of it. But Greg, how he's done that, to me, people say, oh, he's not an X's and O's guy. Who cares?
Right.
If my coach didn't speak English and won games, I wouldn't care. I mean, I really would. I wouldn't care if he has never seen football in his life, can't speak English, is a deaf mute. And if he won games, I don't care. It's all about winning games, and he's doing it.
Fair. But I get the animosity from both the media and from casual fans like you or like Bill or like anybody else. I get it. Because it is very easy to look at Coach O and say, man, you know, and I love Coach O. We've talked about this a lot. I love Coach O. It's very easy to make that comparison and say, man, Dabo's what a baby. You know, here he is. Woe is him. He's won. Blake, by the way, we haven't lost a game in 700 days. I figured that out the other day. Here he is. He hadn't lost a game in 700 days, defending national champion. He's undefeated. He's going to the playoffs. All he's got to do is win, and he's whining. It's really easy. I know it is. I know it's really easy to say that. But at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, I know this is – hey, he's a salesman. This is selling. This is what he does. Anytime he opens his mouth, he's selling. You just got to figure out what he's selling and who he's selling it to. And like you said, in this case, he's selling motivation to his players, and he's also selling a contingency plan, a backup plan to the committee and to the media if Clemson does lose to Virginia.
He is selling the fact on a national spotlight that, hey, guys, I got your back. That's what he's doing, his team. I get it. But he's still a whiner. And Dabo, Dabo loves to talk.
Blabo, and, yeah.
He does. I mean, Danny Ford said that. But, you know, like, yeah, I'm sure he gets on Danny's nerves. But Danny said that too. And he does. But I get it. There's a reason to do it. But it's still, I'm still hall of shaming him for just, come on, Dabo. I mean, really? You got the second best quarterback in the ACC? I'm just kidding. he is a top quarterback in the ACC and a top five quarterback in the country. You have a top five running back in the country. You have a top five receiver in the country. You got a top five hybrid linebacker safety in the country.
Yep.
You got a lot of weapons on that damn team. Woe is me, ain't flying them. Look, my team went 4-8. My team can't even. My quarterback played with a torn meniscus. We have nobody healthy. Our coach is incompetent. Woe is me. Yeah, sell that to somebody else, man.
Yep, but he ain't selling to you. That's the thing.
He's selling to whoever will listen. Well, but he is selling to his team and his fan base. I get that. He is.
And like you said, he's selling to the media and creating a contingency plan, a little backup plan in case Clemson loses. And I get that. But yeah, it comes across as whining. I get it.
Yeah. No, anyway, that long haul of shame who is your hall of shame, Greg?
I sound like a broken record, but you put Dabo in the hall of shame all the time. I can do this. NC State / Dave Doran again. Look, man, I'm telling you, getting spanked at home by a 6-6 rival team is now the norm. NC State, get used to this. This is going to happen. UNC is not a great team this year. I think they will be good next year. They're a decent team this year. They're not great. And they came to your house and beat you by 31 points. NC State, dark times ahead unless they make a change, and it doesn't look like they're going to. This is the norm now for NC State, I think. I don't see any reason to suspect things are going to change unless big changes happen at the top. Sorry, NC State and Dave Doran, you were in the Hall of Shame this week.
Well, Greg, you know what, though? I agree with that. But State has a bad year next year. Hey, go have that guy from Charlotte row the boat 2.0 and bring him up there.
Row the boat 2 would be a fantastic hire. Assuming now it's a small sample size. He's only been a head coach for a year, but if
next year they go to a bowl game again, they show progression. Sometimes you have to go out and make it out of the box hire. As a Clemson fan, you sure know that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what they do.
I agree. All right, Blake, we'll switch things up the order a little bit. Let's go. Did you do power rankings?
I did.
All right, let's talk power rankings, Blake.
All right.
Who is picking up the rear?
We're in the ACC, and that is the Wolfpack, brother.
Indeed, same here. What about 13?
Manny Diaz, your Hurricanes make 13th on my book. You suck.
All right, you went there. I don't blame you. I put Georgia Tech 13. Sorry, Caroline. Okay. Miami 12th. The fighting Manny Diaz is at 12. Yep. How about 11?
I got Georgia Tech at 12, by the way.
Yeah.
I 11, I got Syracuse.
I have Syracuse at 11. 10.
The Dukies.
Me too. 9.
Boston College.
The Jesuits. 8.
Pitt.
Okay. I got Florida State at 8. I got Pitt at 7.
Okay. I got Wake at 7, Florida State at 6.
Interesting. Now, this is where it gets very jumbled for me. I don't have a clue because, yeah, I don't know. All right. So, where are we? 6?
We're at 5 now.
Well, I got UNC at 6. I don't think I said that.
Okay, UNC at 6. I got Florida State at 6. Okay.
Right. Who you got at 5?
Louisville.
I got Wake at 5. I don't know where to put them. What about 4?
UNC.
All right, that's fair. I got Louisville at 4, but man, 4 through 7 or so for me is pretty even.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I'm guessing you got Virginia Tech at 3.
Yep.
UVA at 2, Clemson 1.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Then these won't change unless Virginia pulls the upset off, which, by the way, so we'll do, I'll tell you what, Blake, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do SEC recap and power rankings, and then we'll do predictions.
Yep. All good right. deal.
And we're back. All right, Blake, let's shift gears and talk SEC, specifically one of the great games of the weekend, and it always is, seemingly, and that is the Egg Bowl. Of course you watch this because this is the only game on Thanksgiving yep. night. And the final score of this game, Blake, Mississippi State ended up squeaking out a victory over Ole Miss 21-20. We both had Ole Miss winning. I actually had Ole Miss winning by a point, so I got the 2.5-point little backdoor cover there.
Yeah, you did.
You had Ole Miss winning by 3, so, man, you just missed out on the – just missed the win on that.
Yeah.
But, of course, but this game – all right, so the Egg Bowl was
– I mean, this, the Egg Bowl's legendary, by
bonkers.
The way.
Bonkers game.
Yeah, this is the ACC Coastal Division as far as the game goes.
Right. Boiled down into 3.5 hours, this is the Coastal Division, essentially.
Yeah.
And, Blake, not to tip my hand too early, but it got crazier this weekend. There was actually a crazier game than this, and I didn't think that there would be, but this one was absolutely insane. 21-20 was the final score. Back and forth the whole game, as the Egg Bowl normally is, tied at 14 at the half. And then, Blake, I saw two things in this game that I've never seen before, and they're both from the same player, and I'm sure you know who that is. Or do you?
Go ahead and fill me in.
Elijah Moore. For one, for Ole Miss, for one, he is the same guy, and I'm sure all the listeners know where I'm going with this, but what you may not remember is that he was the guy who called for a fair catch after he caught the punt, which I've never seen before. And, you know, Blake,
part of me
is like, man, if you put me out there, am I going to screw something up? Of course I am. You know, even if I've done this all my life, whatever, like, you know, you make mistakes, whatever. I get that. Hey, when the lights are shining bright, maybe you do get some things out of order. I get that. But I've never seen that before. He caught it and then waved the fair catch.
I mean, that's like running the wrong way or something.
Right, which happens sometimes. But he caught it, waved for a fair catch, and then just got hit. Hilarious, right?
Yeah.
But then we all know how the game ended.
Yeah.
With very little time left, Ole Miss ends up scoring a touchdown, which, by the way, that last drive, I think I sent you. I got to pull up the screenshot. I think I sent this to you guys.
Yeah, you sent me something. Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead. What were you going to say about this game? I got to pull something up. I meant to do this ahead of time. Go ahead.
Basically, this game was just what makes the Egg Bowl so great. The back and forth. The Hail Mary. Remember the Hail Mary? I mean, not Hail Mary, but it was basically.
Yeah.
Like when BYU beat Tennessee, they had that same kind of play at the end of the game to get them in scoring position. The same thing happens on fourth down. They get down there. I mean, and of course, all the stuff that happened prior to this, by the way. But getting down and scoring with just mere seconds left, and then, oh, man, then the missed extra point because of the dog dance, whatever you want to call it, just a beyond dumb play. You wonder what goes through these kids' heads, calling fair catch, you call the ball, doing something like that. Just really, there's no. I mean, the guy cost his team the game, and may have cost Matt Luke his job.
Right. And as we were talking about before we started recording, Matt Luke ends up getting fired. Only, what, a couple of days after this game. You wonder if this game turns out differently. Look, Ole Miss was not going to make a bowl even if they won this game, but you wonder if this game turns out differently if Matt Luke keeps his job, which means you wonder if the mimicked urinating had something to do eventually with Matt Luke losing his job.
Yeah. I hope not. Frankly, but I think maybe it did.
Yeah, all right, so Blake, I got it. The last drive for Ole Miss, which they had the ball with, you know, a minute and change left. They had to go all the way down the field, and they did, but it was very interesting. The last drive had a 4th and 26. By the way, a converted 4th and 26.
Mm-hmm.
A converted 4th and 26, a successful Hail Mary, which was on that 4th and 26.
Yep.
4 first downs, 6 penalty flags, 3 injuries, 3 interceptions that were actually called back or negated by penalties. 2 plays completed and called back because it was blown dead pre-snap. A touchdown with less than 10 seconds remaining. A celebration that involved peeing like a dog. a missed point after, benches cleared. All that in the last drive. That is the Egg Bowl summed up in one drive right
there. That is. And I just hate that it ended that way as far as that was how the game ended.
Right.
You know, you just want the game to end with going to overtime, seeing who's the last team standing kind of thing. Didn't go to that. And you also remember they were going to penalize the Ole Miss on the kickoff. They said, oh, no. Back them up 15 yards. Very smart, because with mere seconds left, who cares where they're kicking off from?
Right, and I'm not so sure that Ole Miss doesn't go for two at that point.
You wonder about that. I don't know. It's hard to say, but but Matt Luke's out, and he's a guy who loves Ole Miss, and I think, they went 4-8, but they were competitive for most of the year. They were just a little bit, came up short a few times. Got a really bright future with a true freshman quarterback, Plumlee.
Mm-hmm.
I think this team, I just think this is the wrong move.
Agreed.
Don't understand it, Greg.
But if you missed this game, keep an eye out for it on ESPN or ESPN Classic or SEC Network or wherever it's on. Keep an eye out. If they show the replay of this game, you will not regret it. I promise you. It's a fantastic way to start the weekend off.
Let me ask you a question, Greg. Yes. If Ole Miss wins that game, let's say they score and the guy didn't piss like a moron or do the dog thing, and Ole Miss wins, is Joe Moorhead fired?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Do you?
I don't think so, but you never know. I don't know.
True.
I don't think they're very happy with him down there.
If Ole Miss blows out Mississippi State, if it's a 4-touchdown game, maybe. But a close game like that, where with a kind of crazy last drive and very improbable last drive, probably not. But maybe. All right, we ready? We ready to move on?
Yeah, all right, man.
Let's talk Mizzou and Arkansas. Mizzou finishing the season 6-6. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean a bowl for Mizzou, as we talked about. The final score, 24-14 over Arkansas. We did hear from our buddy CK. He said, not our best showing, but at least a win. Bryant was out with an injury. I saw that because I saw whoever the other kid, what, Powell. Yeah, I saw Powell playing, and I thought, oh, God, is Bryant, did they bench him? Is he out with an injury? Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the end of Kelly Bryant in the college football ranks.
Yep.
Didn't quite go out the way I'm sure he wanted to, but I wish him the best, of course.
Yeah.
And he said, third string Powell turned an okay performance, 8-14, 100 yards, 100-plus touchdown and interception. At least he had the ball moving down the field, which was something we struggled with during the six-game losing streak. So he said, I won't comment on the sanctions being upheld. He said, you both seemed informed during the last podcast, but it is bogus. I always love that word.
Yeah, I do too. And he's exactly right. It's awful. But
so
look, NCAA, look, we talk about the whole Bosworth thing, and that's how we feel about it.
Yes. So what's interesting is the final score, 24-14. Mizzou wins by 10. The line was 11.5. I picked Mizzou to cover. You picked Mizzou by 11, so you win that game by a half point. Nicely done, Blake. What else can we say about this?
Well, I think the big story, because I think it was kind of a boring game. Sorry, Mizzou.
Yeah, it was.
It was a boring game. It was on Friday after Thanksgiving. No, or was it Saturday?
I think this was Friday.
I think it was, too, for some reason. I watched this game. I got kind of bored with it. Arkansas has that coach, Lunny, whatever his name is. He's not going to be retained, obviously. And then the big news is Mizzou fires Barry Odom.
That's right.
I get it, but I don't get it, I guess. I think would it not have been simpler to fire Derek Dooley?
Well, yeah.
I think their defense was pretty solid this year. I mean, it was okay. And I mean offensively they had some issues, but some big issues. But on defense, I thought they were pretty good. And I just think you bring in a guy, with a new system and a new direction. I never liked the Derek Dooley hire anyway. I've never been a fan of Dooley, but they did it because they had to replace Heupel. I loved Heupel, by the way.
Yeah.
But I just think it was kind of another knee-jerk reaction.
Well,
Olmos fires Luke and Mizzou fires Odom. I'm not sure that's the best move.
Well, CK says, I know you're not supposed to root for your team's opponent, but going into this week's game, I was almost hoping Arkansas would beat us so they'd be forced to let Odom go. CK is not an Odom fan. Yeah, and he said, turns out it was probably in the cards anyway. And he gives some stats. So, first of all, Odom was 25-25 overall at Mizzou, 13-19 in the SEC, 12-6 non-conference, and 1-10 versus ranked opponents. Yep. And he says, but perhaps most telling, and this was incredible actually, 18-10 at home, 65%, but 7-15 on the road, 32% on the road. That's a stark difference. You know, you always hear about home field advantage. Normally, your home winning percentage is not double your road winning percentage, but in his case, it was. That's unusual. I don't know what to make of that.
That's tough. And I get what I get what CK's saying here. I totally get it. But I don't know. Is this his third or fourth year? Fourth year. Yeah. Well, I guess here's the thing. If you fire him, which they did, you gotta bring in somebody better. So what direction they go, I don't know. I'm hearing the guy from Tulane, Fritz. He was at a Missouri directional school before, I think Tulane, and did a good job there. And he's done pretty good at Tulane and would love to have the Missouri job. It's his dream job. So you part of me wonders, is that direction they go? But then I heard today that a guy that they may have some interest in is Jim McElwain. And I think that would be an absolute disaster to go that route.
Well, let me ask you something, Blake. Where is Jim McElwain right now?
Central Michigan or he's at some directional Michigan school.
He's at a directional Michigan school, which puts you about as far away from major football as you can get, really.
Yeah.
He was at Florida. He humped a shark, got fired. Now he's at a directional school in Michigan somewhere. I would stay as far away from him as possible. I'm with you on this.
His offense at Florida, his claim to fame was, I'm an offensive guy, and his offense at Florida sucked.
Terrible. Yeah, terrible.
And he won off the back of Muschamp's players who – because Muschamp recruited a lot of good players on defense, and he won off the backs of those guys. And then when those guys moved on, you know, the raft had a hole in it, and it just went up and it sank, and that's where his career went. But I've never that buck tooth guy. I haven't been a fan because A, I don't like the guy personally. I think he does weird interviews, and B, I don't think he's a very good coach.
Right.
And I think if you're Mizzou. You got to be a little bit different. You got to go like Norvell, which would be a really good hire if you get Norvell. Fritz from Tulane. Maybe even a Lane Kiffin. I know that sounds crazy, but somebody to bring something to your school that is something different. I mean, recruiting's a big deal. Mizzou's not a state that has a lot of talent. You have to go out of state to recruit a lot. But also a different – the offensive scheme and system. You know, when they had Pinkel, they were rolling pretty good there.
True.
And
then
he got older.
Won the East a couple times. Once or twice.
Yeah. Yep. Twice. Got older, but you know, got cancer. I think with the cancer, he just kind of got burned out. But it's tough to find a Gary Pinkel. That's a tough one to find. But if you can find a guy similar to that, who has more of a spread offense, more of, I'm not going to say gimmicky, but kind of gimmicky, and then a staff that can recruit, especially like Texas, recruit, you know, Tennessee, that area. I think it's where you got to go. But I don't think McElwain's the guy, Greg. I think that'd be a major, major mistake.
Horrible.
I don't get him. Fritz might be okay, the Tulane coach. That might be an area you want to go in because he's a Missouri guy. It's his dream job. And anytime you bring in a guy who is his dream job, they're going to care a little bit more.
A la so. Coach O, yeah.
Yeah, Coach O, there are more examples of that, but, you know, I think Lou Holtz's dream job was Notre Dame, and, you know, so, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I mean, and actually Arkansas, too, is a school with a fired coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coach.
A lot of opens. Yeah, we may need to do a coaching carousel.
Yeah. So Arkansas is an interesting job, too, because they're in a situation where they got to recruit Texas, and Texas is tougher to recruit now. So where do you go if you're Arkansas? I don't know.
Yep. All right, let's move on. Let's talk Kentucky beating up on Louisville 45-13. Blake, you took Kentucky to win, but Louisville in the points. I took Louisville outright in the upset.
Yeah,
we were way off. It was Kentucky was favored by 3, and this was one of the craziest games I've ever seen in that I don't think I've ever seen in my life a team complete one pass and win the game, and unless maybe a triple option team, but even still, I'm not sure. In this case, Blake, Bowden was – I always want to say Bowden when I see his name because it's spelled the same.
It's spelled Bowden but pronounced Bowden.
Right, they always – he was 1 for 2 for 4 yards, and they won the game. And the reason they won the game was because Louisville absolutely cannot stop Kentucky on the ground. Bowden himself ran for 284 yards. In fact, Blake, they racked up 517 total yards, 6 touchdowns on the ground. I mean, as you know, that one pass was not a touchdown pass. 6 touchdowns on the ground, 517 of their 521 yards came from running the ball. One of the craziest things I've seen lately.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely incredible. And this, I thought, could have been the low-key game of the day.
Yeah.
I thought it could be.
Yep.
I mean, I like the matchup, rivalry. Both teams, I thought were pretty equal. And Kentucky just kind of pushed them around. I didn't realize Kentucky would be that physical with them, but they just pushed them around. Poor Louisville. It was ugly. I mean, Louisville had some success, but they were kind of outmanned in this game, frankly. And, you know, Bowden, what a game he had. I mean, 280 on the ground is a team you have 517 rushing. I mean, good God, 517. Also, you know, Louisville had 2 turnovers. But, yeah, Kentucky, I mean, I got to give credit to Mark Stoops and his staff. They've done a great job this year. This is a team that Greg – I thought they might really hit rock bottom and go like 4-8.
Yeah.
This is 7-5 team won a bowl game, probably the Music City Bowl. So congrats to Kentucky. And will this be Mark Stoops' last game in Lexington? We don't know. Possibly could go to Florida State. We don't know yet, but that's definitely possible. That's on the radar anyway. So,
no, but to your point, you're right, because this is a team that, as we've talked about other teams, but this is a team that suffered a lot of attrition, including injuries this year, and it was easy to write them off. In fact, I think we probably both sort of did early in the season, and they turned it around, and heck, I don't know, man. This is I just wonder how you can be so one-dimensional and still win a football game, and not just win, but absolutely blow a team out. It's just, that's crazy to me that they were able to do this.
You had to be physical, just out, man.
Now you're absolutely right.
You have to be.
You're absolutely right.
And that's what they did. But of course, look, I mean, Louisville this year, 7-5. I mean, Satterfield's first year.
He's ACC coach of the year. Yeah, I think he is.
Too. Done a great job. I think he's going to be a great coach for a long time. You got to be happy if you're a Louisville fan. I know it sucks to lose this game, but, man, I mean, what a season for them. Not one that any of us expected. We expected kind of a, I think you did too, like a 3-9, 2-10 type season.
Right, yeah.
And you're 7-5, you won a bowl game in his first year. And also he left a really good team at App State when he left. So, yeah, you're going to be fine, Louisville. And I mean, Kentucky will too if they can keep Mark Stoops. That's the perfect place for him. He does not need to go to Florida State, frankly. That's the perfect place for him.
I think you're right. All right, let's move on. Let's talk Iron Bowl. One of the best Iron Bowls I've seen in a long time, Blake. Auburn ends up winning this 48-45, which, by the way, this is the second highest scoring Iron Bowl in history. And it wasn't far behind the highest one. I think the highest one's 99. This is just a handful of points behind that. Yep. Bama was favored by 4. We both took Bama to win and cover, but I'm happy to be wrong in this case. Bama falls to 10-2, Auburn 9-3. But what a crazy game. This is sort of like the Virginia Tech game in a lot of ways, and the Egg Bowl in a lot of ways too. Ebbs and flows, a lot of momentum shifts back and forth. There were times when I thought Bama was going to run away with it. There were times when I thought Auburn was going to run away with it, and neither really happened, just back and forth, back and forth. What sticks out to you the most about this game, Blake?
Well, actually, Well, I say what sticks out the most to me are the two pick sixes Auburn got.
Right.
That was huge.
Including the butt one where you – I don't even know how that happened.
You talk about that's a 14-point swing.
Yes.
That's huge in games like this. Auburn, you know, Gus Malzahn, you know, this is a guy that I think if he loses this game, he's probably fired. And he's probably coached at Arkansas next year. He wins it. He's safe. I think if you're Malzahn, I think you almost think, God, do I really want to coach you anymore? Because it's a lot of stress every year for him, obviously. But no, Auburn's a team with a good defense and an offense that has been inconsistent this year. But in this game, offense played darn well, but they couldn't stop Bama very well, frankly.
Right.
Mac Jones played great for Bama, by the way. He exceeded my expectations. I didn't think he'd do much. And his numbers, Greg, he was
26 for 39. And actually,
35.
He settled in. He was a little shaky at the beginning, but he settled in and actually looked pretty good. I do wonder if you could put almost any – not to take anything away from him. I do wonder if you could put almost anybody back there, throw into the Ruggs and Waddles and you know, Devontae Smith, just, Jerry Judy's of the world.
It's a different guy every week. This week it was Waddle. I mean, he was just –
oh, God, he was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen this, Greg, skill, talented receiver like they have, ever. I've never seen four. They got four. And every guy – they're not the big guys. Except Judy, I think maybe 6'1 or 6'2. The other guys, 5'11, 5'10. But man, if they catch the ball in space, they could score on any play. I mean, it's crazy how they got. And I think three of those guys, Judy, Smith, and Ruggs were all in the same class. What a recruiting class that year was. And then Waddle was the next year. But man, I'm gonna miss watching those guys play because I think they're gonna turn pro. All of them, Smith, Judy, and Ruggs, I think all go pro. Of course, Waddle's back as a sophomore. But I'm gonna miss watching that receiving crew, man, because that's fun. That's kind of video game football.
So who was in the same class? Judy, Smith, and Ruggs?
Judy, Smith, and Ruggs, yeah.
And that same Waddle's class and that same class as Tua.
Yes. God. Same class as Tua.
Yeah.
And is maybe the same class as Najee Harris, too? Was he in that class?
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't even count counting the guys on defense.
Yeah, Najee Harris is a junior, so that's the same class.
Yeah. So they,
my gosh. Geez.
And then also, you can throw in probably several guys on defense starting. Bama can recruit if he hadn't read the memo. They can recruit. But,
yes.
Typically not that good. But, look, if you're Alabama, I mean, it's the first playoff they haven't been in. Think about that.
Crazy.
Yeah, and they'll be in a major bowl, though. And this is still a 10-2 football team. You lose 46-41 to LSU and 48-45 to Auburn. There's still I still think this team is the fourth best team in the country, frankly. I still do. I know that sounds crazy, but who would you – let me ask you a question, Greg. Who would you rather play in the playoffs, Bama or Oregon?
I'd much rather play Oregon, not even a question.
Bama or Utah?
Oh, God, of course Bama.
Bama or Oklahoma?
Bama. Blake, ask me Bama or Georgia.
Oh, yeah, Bama.
Bama.
I mean, you would rather play Georgia?
Yeah. Yes, I'd rather play Georgia, correct.
This team is a dangerous – this is one of the better two-loss teams you'll ever see. But the season's – I mean – that playoff run's done as far as Auburn goes. Hey, you beat Bama. I mean, Toomer's Corner. Did you see Toomer's Corner?
It was fantastic. That was great, wasn't it?
My God, yeah. It was pretty cool. But so did Auburn finish 9-3?
Auburn is 9-3, yeah.
Another year for Auburn, but in the freaking arms race in the SEC West, it ain't close to being enough. So
unfortunately, yeah. So
a great game, by the way.
Yep. And what did you think about the last play of the first half? That's pretty controversial. What did you think about that?
Rest of memory.
When they put a second back on the clock and gave Auburn a chance to kick the field goal with no time remaining.
I didn't like it because I get it. You know, when you look at the replay, was he – I'm not even sure he was down. Like, he could have been on top of a guy. I'm not sure he was down.
I think he was down.
He could have been. I get Saban's point. I get it. But the rules are the rules, right? I mean, yep. That's the rule. It is the rule.
It just sucks, man, because Yeah, I agree. The rule's a rule. It sucks because it took a ref screw up. And yeah. They go back and fix it. And fixing it, the actual act of fixing it, gave Auburn an advantage.
Yep. But also, too, give Auburn credit for getting on the field.
And waiting and telling the center, and, hey, as soon as he blows that whistle, snap the ball.
What, 50?
Yeah, long field goal.
So, I mean, I got to credit Auburn for that, too. He had a heck of a – I mean, Auburn was out there ready once that clock was winding, and he made the kick, and that kick turned out to be the game winner,
yeah,
frankly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I get why Saban was – and Saban was pissed.
He was as mad as I've seen him.
But he's kind of funny when he gets mad for some reason.
Hilarious.
But I get why he was mad. I get it. But, I mean, was the right call made? Probably, yeah, I think so.
But if they had done their job and blown it that way on the field,
yeah,
the field goal would have never happened.
Asking SEC refs to do the right thing and do their job? Give me a break. SEC officiating? Man, I'd fire every one of them.
You say that every week. There's no refs left in your world.
Nope, I bring in high school refs or something. Gone. They're awful.
All right, Blake, what else can we say?
Bring that bug-eyed guy back. Remember that bug-eyed ref?
Which one?
The one who had the bug eyes. Like he was tripping on acid. The guy
I don't know, man.
I haven't seen him in a couple years. But he was always doing the big games. He had big bug eyes. I know you know what I'm talking about.
If I saw a picture of him, I'd probably recognize him. But
yeah. I'd bring him back. I mean, I thought he sucked, but he's better than these guys. I mean, he can see very clearly. Something Ritter. The bug-eyed ref. Anyway,
what else can we say? What else can we say about this?
Nothing. It was a great game.
It was great, and it's always great to see Alabama get eliminated from playoff contention. If you're, you know, unless you're an Alabama fan, of course. But I'm happy to see them. Not in it.
Understand. And if I'm LSU, if I'm Ohio State, I'm happy too.
Yes. And that's not, Blake, even if Clemson weren't in contention, I'd still be happy to not see Bama in it because for crying out loud, they're in it all the time. And you can say that about Clemson too. I get it.
Yeah, you can now.
Yeah. Let's talk Tennessee beating Vandy 28-10. Line was 21.5. We both picked Tennessee to win and cover. We were both wrong. So Tennessee ends up 7-5. We've talked about the renaissance of Tennessee. Vandy still is Vandy, 3-9. They finished the season. What can we say about this one, Blake? Anything notable?
Hey, what was the line, Tennessee Vandy?
21.5.
I picked Vandy to cover.
No, you picked Tennessee 38-14. I got
31-14. What I got.
I wrote 38. I'll give it to you. Fine. I'll have to go back and check the tape, but for now, I'll give it to you.
Okay. I had that written down, 31-14. Maybe I said something different.
Maybe so I might have put it down wrong. If that's the case, Blake, that puts you at 4-4, I'm sorry, on the week, which puts you at 52-35, which is pretty darn good against the spread. This season, or any season for that matter.
But it could be 51-36.
Be 51-36. But anyway, anything we can say about Tennessee Vandy?
No, I mean, look, Vandy, Mason has another year. He's staying for another year. Jeremy Pruitt, hey, look, that team got better as the year went on. I thought they were done. I thought he might be done. He turned the corner, give him credit for, I mean, a really good coaching job this year.
Yeah, fair enough.
That.
Yeah, and we wrote them off sort of like we
– Oh, yeah.
We've actually done that. We did that with Kentucky. We did a little bit with Florida State too. There have been a few teams this year that have kind of come back, that, you know, kind of pulled a Lazarus and come back from the dead.
Yep.
Tennessee is one of those. And, yeah, Tennessee 7-5, kind of crazy. Yeah. All right, Blake, let's talk LSU beating up on A&M. We got to refer back to our buddy LSU Bill.
Yep.
His email says, enjoying the season but not gloating. And but I find that hard to believe because he says my Hall of Fame, and he says the tweet of the season by Joe Burrow, and he spells it the Cajun way, which I loved, by the way. But
yep.
What? Of course, he has a name that it works for. You know, not everybody has a name that it works for, but he does. But anyway, the tweet is Death Valley, the real one in Baton Rouge, is the place where opponents' dreams come to die. It is where my dream came true. Great tweet. Of course, Bill includes that because it's a reference to It's a slight to on Clemson's Death Valley, which I get that. That is not lost on me. But at the same time, good tweet. Happy for Joe Burrow. Happy for LSU. Blake, this game was a butt kicking. 50-7 was the final score.
Yeah, I think A&M. I personally think LSU was a little bit. I think part of the last year's game was part of this year's game.
Well, they got screwed last year.
They got screwed last year, and some coaches got in a fire for the game, and they came in this game angry. And A&M didn't have a chance. They are for real, no doubt about it. This team could very easily be your national champions. They're very, very good. On defense, they got some issues a little bit, but offensively, they're the best in the country. Joe Burrow, who, when he came on the field prior to the game with his jersey that spelled the Cajun way, Burrow, I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah.
That was really cool. I've never seen a transformation like I've seen with this team this year from last year. Never. Not an offense to go from rubbing two sticks together to a Zippo lighter in 1 year. I mean, I've never, and that's a Seinfeld reference, and I have never seen that in my life. I mean, it's incredible what they've done. The coaching staff, Ensminger and Joe Brady, Joe Burrow, their receivers, Chase, Marshall, Jefferson, I mean, Edwards-Helaire, the most underrated back in the country. Actually, an underrated offensive line who's played pretty well, too. This is a great football team, an elite team. What a way to cap your season. Go undefeated. They got Georgia next week. Yeah, I mean, as far as A&M goes, Greg, look, a good year. You go 7-5 with the toughest schedule in the country. So, for me, that's actually better than I thought they do. And I think Jimbo... next year you got Mon back. You got some recruiting winning. Battles you're winning. I think you have a top 10 class coming in. So the future's bright there, too, I think. I actually like what they're doing. And next year, think about if you're A&M. Joe Burrow's gone. Tua's gone. Auburn loses a ton on defense. Could you compete for the division next year?
Maybe.
Who knows?
Blake, so, I'm going to throw some stats at you.
Okay.
You're talking about rubbing two sticks together versus Zippo lighter.
Oh, God, yeah.
Blake, Joe Burrow himself, first of all, you talk about a Zippo lighter, this is more like a flamethrower.
Yeah.
Blake, he finishes the season, of course, not including championship week, but regular season, 12 games, he finishes the season throwing for 78.3%, 4,300 yards, 4,366, 44 touchdowns, 6 picks. Mm-hmm. Last year, Blake, he mm-hmm. was throwing for a shade under 58%, 16 touchdowns, 5 picks. I don't know that I've seen a transformation from an offense and a transformation individually like I've seen from LSU this year. It's fantastic to watch. I'm sure, especially if you're an LSU fan, like we have a few listeners who are LSU fans, we know. Fantastic. Very happy for LSU, the fan base, Coach O, et cetera. It's been fantastic to watch.
Yeah, I'm happy too. And I'm actually, I've been watching football. I've been married for, I don't know how long it is now. It's been a while. And... my wife has never had shown any interest in watching football until Joe Burrow and Ed Orgeron started winning for LSU, and now she loves LSU. So
she's a big Dabo fan, though, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, she loves him. She has friends that sure do.
I'm sure.
But and I'm like, when South Carolina was winning, I didn't hear nothing out of you. Now LSU's winning with Joe Burrow and Ed Orgeron, and you want to go to a game down there, which is cool, but I'm like, come on, It'd be nice to have that kind of enthusiasm for South Carolina, that's all I'll say.
Fair.
But it's not there, and it won't be there, I guess.
So LSU comes in to championship week just as hot as ever. It's going to be an interesting game, which, of course, we'll talk about in the next segment. First, Blake, let's briefly talk Florida beating up on Florida State 40-17. This took us both by surprise by just the margin of victory. We both picked Florida
a little bit easily,
but we both picked much lower scoring games. You said 30-16. I said 28-13. Florida was favored by 17, ended up covering those 17 points.
Yep.
Florida's just a better team. And, heck, Blake, Trask had a great game. It's very – as we've said,
He does it every week.
it's a broken record, but it's just amazing this team with Trask versus Felipe Franks, whom I heard is transferring.
Well, I would hope so. He ain't going to play there next year. But no, I mean, and I know Trask hadn't played a game until this year since he was in Pee Wee or something, whatever they. You know, those things like it's an urban legend that keeps growing. First was in high school, then it's junior high, now it's Pee Wee. He hadn't played a game since, or hadn't started a game since Pee Wee or whatever.
Next, it'll
it is.
Be never. He never started a game.
He never started a game in his life.
Never suited up.
He didn't
up.
Start playing football. He got to Florida, probably. Didn't yeah. next. He didn't even start to go to Florida. But no, look, Trask, I mean, he throws a really catchable ball and knows where to go with the ball. And he's actually, he has a size to see over the line, and he's actually got enough mobility to avoid pressure a little bit. He's not mobile, but enough. But no, I mean, I didn't expect this kind of blowout, I guess, but I'm not surprised they won, obviously, because we both picked them. But Florida State, hey, look, new coach coming in next year. Who would that be? Who knows? But they need one because it's really weird. You know, we talked about Clemson and Dabo and his old rant, and the ACC is really down. To me, the ACC can only be back to where it needs to be. You have to have Florida State part of that mix.
Yeah, I agree.
They've got to be back. And also, Miami, to some extent, has to be back. And also Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech, I was
going to say. Those schools are key that to your league being among the upper tier as far as conferences go.
And if you can get a Georgia Tech to be solid, and if you can get a UNC or NC State.
Louisville, somebody like that, that's icing on the cake. But you need your big dogs to be big dogs. And right now you have one big dog.
Right, right.
You know, so.
That said, Florida kind of sneakily finishes the season 10-2.
Yeah, very sneakily.
If you had asked me what Florida's record was, I probably would have been like, I don't know, 9-3, maybe 8-4. Like, I feel like they lost a few games. No, 10-2. 10-2, and to be 10-2 based on what we saw of week one against Miami, it's pretty incredible. Think about where Miami is, and Florida have played an ugly game and barely beat them. But now 10-2. Florida State, on the other hand, hey, 6-6, they're going to a bowl. A little bit of improvement over last year. A lot of improvement over what we saw at the beginning of the season. But, yeah, I don't know much else we can say about this particular game. Florida State's just not as good as Florida.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
If Franks hadn't gotten hurt.
I don't know.
He's just, what do you think they do?
I
think
7-5?
Yeah. I swear I think that. They're 7-5 team with them.
And that's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, Blake, can a good quarterback.
They don't beat Kentucky if he. I mean, I'm telling you, Kentucky wins that game if he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. Is a good quarterback over a mediocre at best quarterback worth 3 wins? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I absolutely think so. All right, Blake, let's talk. Clemson beating South Carolina, final score 38-3. Line was 26.5, so Clemson covered that, which we both picked. I said you said 42-9, I said 49-17. What is notable about this, Blake?
It was what I expected. I expected kind of what we saw. I expected Clemson to, I expected us to have a really hard time moving the ball because we can't move the ball against Texas A&M and Clemson's got a better defense than they do. I knew it'd be trouble. Britt Venables versus Brian McClendon is not a mismatch. It is a, I don't even know how you describe that. It is a Hiroshima type disaster, frankly. And I hate to be like saving a 9/11, but that is disastrous. And Clemson's offense against our defense, our defense fought, but at the end of the day, Clemson did what they do. They found matchups. And that's what good coaches do, Greg. And their first 3 touchdowns were all when we had safeties against receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is coaching. That is smart coaching. That is why do you have, and I think I texted.
Multiple times. Yeah, you did.
Why do you have safeties covering Justin Ross and T. Higgins? If you want to have them cover somebody, have them cover the slot guy. Do not have them cover Higgins or Ross. And, well, I mean, look. the first time to, the first TD to Higgins, it was pretty good coverage. Higgins actually pushed him off and got away with it, and it was a touchdown. The second one, JT Ebay was oblivious. He got blown by. Higgins blew by him, and he had no answer for that. And the third one was actually, I thought, really good coverage. I thought Lawrence made it probably as good throw as you can make on that third one. That was a really tough throw. The one where he dropped the snap.
Oh, and then hit it in the little
throws you can make. That's throws you can make. So there's no defense to defend against that. You can't do it. But watching Lawrence, I also see that he is much better when he throws down the field with touch than he is trying to drill it. I think his strength is touch on the ball, accuracy down the field with touch. He's very good at that. As far as drilling the ball and throwing it into tight windows, he's okay, but he's not. That's not his best strength.
He actually misses some short throws where he tries to throw too hard. He'll actually miss some, sort of like a Cam Newton almost. He kind of rifles it and sometimes misses. I agree.
His touch is very good, especially on those like corner routes. Those are tough passes to throw, and he just drops them in there like a surgeon. So I got to give him credit for that. He's a great quarterback. And I mean, I thought we played the run pretty good, actually. I thought we did a good job against the run. I could tell that we were trying to stop the run, but Clemson is a balanced team. And if you stop one, they're going to hit you with the other. And we stopped the run, they hit us with a pass. I think A&M stopped the pass, they hit A&M with a run. Look, it's just a mismatch. You have an elite team against a bad team. And the result is what I expected.
I will say I thought it was interesting. The defense didn't Clemson's defense, I should say, didn't bring pressure as much as I thought. I thought that was
I understand why.
I get it too, but it sort of took me off guard because just not used to seeing that. So it was a little extra wrinkle from Brent Venables, but not a lot of pressure on Helinski.
No, I mean, they brought pressure some, but usually Clemson plays with their hair on fire, and they didn't do that. And I think they were smart enough to say the only chance South Carolina has is if we bring pressure and they hit a big play.
Right.
Because if we play our base defense, we don't think they can score on us, or very little, and it was a field goal. And that was a smart – I mean, Venables is on it. I mean, he's not the highest-paid guy in the country for – I don't know – if he's not the highest paid, he should be. He's the best in the business, and the best in the business, I mean, do things for a reason. They don't half-ass it. And no, he's just a smart guy, and he knows what he watches film. I mean, you tell when a guy watches film, and he watches film, a lot of film, and he and our guys, if they do watch it, I'm not seeing any evidence of it, frankly. But it's hard to attack Clemson if they take away or if they make you drive the field and you got a quarterback who can barely move and you got running backs who aren't healthy and they're better up front than you are, it's just, you don't have a chance.
Fair enough. All right, Blake.
We didn't have a chance, Greg.
Let's first of all, so if you went 4-4 this week, I'll have to go back and, like I said, check the tape.
I would say 3-5 because I may have said a different score.
No, I'll go ahead and give it to you. You went 52-35 on the year. That is fantastic. You had a really great year this year, both in the ACC and the SEC. I was right at 500 in both, Blake. I was 3-5 this week, which puts me at 44-43. That's a one game above 500.
That's crazy.
Against the spread. In both leagues? Yeah, well, I was 500 in the ACC, one game above in the SEC. Yep. So let's talk Hall of Fame and Hall of Shame, Blake. Who's in your Hall of Fame this week?
Dan Mullen.
Oh.
Because I'm going to tell you why. First of all, we talked about earlier, Florida, under the radar, big time.
Mm-hmm.
This team went 10-2. It's the quietest 10-2 you ever see.
Yeah.
A quiet 10-2. And also because Dan Mullen likes a quarterback who is a dual threat and runner. And he totally revamped his offense for the strengths of Trask. And that's the sign of a good coach. And I think Dan Mullen's a very good coach. Florida made the right choice hiring him. He's won 10 games in back-to-back seasons his first 2 years. And I'm sure Florida fans are so glad that the Bucktooth guy is a directional school in Michigan, and Dan Mullen is in Gainesville. So mine's for Dan Mullen, because I don't think he's been in my Hall of Shame or Hall of Fame all year. So
I find that hard to believe, but maybe.
Yeah, I got to give Dan Mullen some love because he is Dan the man. He is a great coach. So that's my Hall of Fame.
I got Malzahn / Auburn. Hey, look, Blake. Hey. It took a little luck, and it did. They had to get a little bit of help from poor officiating, and they also needed Alabama to miss a field goal, but Alabama's prone to do that. It took a little luck, but they did get the job done, and Blake, anybody who can make Saban as mad as I saw him on Saturday gets Hall of Fame space just by default. So Auburn / Malzahn, also the students with what they did to Toomer's Corner. Yeah. Harvey Updike can't get them all. They rolled the remaining trees with more toilet paper than you'll ever see. I was happy for them. So Malzahn / Auburn's in my Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
What about your Hall of Shame?
I got two. I got Ole Miss firing Matt Luke and that whole situation with the guy peeing. That all goes together. I won't go into it much because we talked about it. But just, I think it's a bad move to fire Matt Luke. You're paying two coaches, Rich Rod, who you just brought in, Rich Rod and McIntyre, the DC, a combined $10 million in guaranteed money, and you fire the head coach after you do that the next year. You don't give it a chance to work. You got an Ole Miss guy who loves the school. The players love him. He was competitive this year. I just think it was a really dumb move to fire him. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was a dumb move. Also, Alabama kicking. Unite Bama. As much as they've done under the Saban era, they said they had the most missed kicks in the last 10 years of anybody in the country.
Yep.
How can they not find, with all the guys they can recruit, how can they not recruit a kicker there? It's incredible. I'm a South Carolina fan. Well, our kicker has been way better than their kickers have, and we haven't recruited that many great kickers, but for some reason ours has been better. I don't care who's – I mean, really, if you're a fan of anybody, you have better kickers. Their kickers are loud. I mean, I don't want to be – say they're lousy, but they're not very good, and they have yet – and it's not just one guy. It is a
– year after probably year. Probably
a dozen guys, and they just can't get that position right. It's cost them a few games, cost them one Saturday, but also Hall of Shame, too. If you're a Bama fan and actually threatening the life of this kicker
– oh, come on.
You need – your ass kicked. It's not any, I'm not kidding. Somebody needs to drag you out of your house and beat you senseless because that is stupid. Threaten a guy over a missed kick. You think he's not trying to make the kick? He missed it. You've won how many national championships? Cry me a river. If you're a fan, you do that, man, I have no sympathy for what happens to you. So Bama kicking, Ole Miss for firing Matt Luke. What do you got, man?
I had Ole Miss for the same reasons you did, but I don't even want to say anything because I think you laid it out about as well as you can.
Okay.
I didn't want to steal your thunder from the
thunder. But heck, anything else besides the Ole Miss firing, or is that your?
Nope, that was it. Ole Miss for firing Matt Luke. I can pile on what's his face, the Ole Miss player for the dog pee thing. We already did that, Ole Miss for firing Matt Luke. We talked about how it, if he hadn't done the piss, maybe he wouldn't be fired. It's crazy, but I like what you said about the guy. I didn't hear about the death threats thing, but I think you hit the nail on the head.
It just really bothers me that somebody. You're that mad over a game that because a kid missed a field goal. It's not like. I'm not saying you should do it, but I would get it more if you're an Ole Miss fan, you're mad at the guy for doing the fake pee.
Right.
That's different. Missing a kick. I'm not saying you should threaten anybody, by the way. But I get the anger more for the guy who fake peed, cost your team the game, than the kid missing the field goal. it's just ridiculous. But yeah, okay.
All right, Blake, let's do our final set of power rankings and then we'll do predictions.
All right.
So who do you got at the bottom?
It's all
same here. 13.
Vanderbilt.
The Commodores at 13 for both of us. What about 12?
Carolina.
Yeah, I got the Chickens. What about 11?
Zoo.
Same. 10.
Miss.
Same. 9.
Mississippi State.
Same. All right. So far, I don't know that we've had perfect 14 through 9 all season. Sure. What about 8? Same. 7?
Tennessee.
Same. 6?
A&M.
You have Florida at 5?
Ew, Auburn at 5.
The first shakeup. I got Florida at 5, Auburn at 4. They get the bump for beating Bama.
Yeah, I don't give them a bump because Florida has done nothing to not get pushed down. I got Florida at 4.
Well, you know, Clemson didn't either, and Clemson got pushed down, so.
That's well played.
So I got Florida at 5, Auburn at 4, but I did struggle with that. Blake, what about 3?
Alabama.
Interesting. I put Bama. And
I get it, put him at 2, but well, you know, I tell you what my logic was, Greg.
All right.
I still think Bama is better than Georgia. In my heart, I do. But Bama went to Auburn and got beat. Georgia went to Auburn and got a win.
Hmm.
I mean,
so
I still think Bama in my heart. I think they're better.
I put Georgia 3, Bama 2, but yes. I thought really hard about putting Bama 3, Georgia 2.
I get it because, I mean, look, the South Carolina fan, Bama kicked our ass in, you know, we beat Georgia. So I can go the other way with that.
Right.
But, I may have thought too much about it, but I'll stick with that because those two teams are playing in the SEC title game. And if Georgia wins, they're in. And LSU's probably in regardless, frankly.
I think they are. And Blake,
like 55-0.
I think Ohio State's in too, regardless.
So do I.
So take that for what it's worth. All right.
They sound. I'm not sure Clemson would not still be in at 4 if you lost to Virginia.
Depends on what else happens. I think there's a path for that. So I don't think it's likely.
If Baylor were to win, if Oregon were to win, and LSU were to win, I think Clemson can squeeze in with a loss. What do you think?
I don't know. Maybe. I think it has to be like pretty much the perfect storm of things to happen.
And if that were to happen, you could say Dabo's crybaby rant may have paid off.
That's what I'm trying to say. It
will happen, obviously. I think Clemson wins that game easily, but let's talk about that now.
Let's talk about it. Let's move into it. So, Virginia, technically Clemson's the home team, but this is in Charlotte. By the way, I'll be at this game. Did I tell you that?
Yes. So you told me that a while back.
Clemson is a 28-point favorite. This game is the 7 p.m. game, if I'm not mistaken. Blake, 28 points. That's an awful lot, but Clemson's won their last however many games by an average of about 40 points, I read. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Blake?
I like the Wahoos and the points.
All right.
And I don't know why, but just too many. Clemson wins this game comfortably, but I like Virginia and the points. Give me Clemson 37-13.
Fair. Very similar to me. I actually like Virginia and these points as well. The reason being, Blake, I my initial pick, I picked Clemson covering that because, Blake, I think this is a bad matchup for Virginia for a number of reasons. For one, look, Virginia's pretty one-dimensional in terms of Perkins.
They are.
And Venables is going to chew. I mean, Venables will figure that out. Look, I don't
think they have difference makers at wide receiver. Right. And that's what you need against Clemson. You have to have difference makers, and I don't think they have them.
But under normal circumstances, Blake, Clemson covers the 28 points. I don't think Clemson does because Dabo doesn't have to. This doesn't have to be a statement win at this point. All you got to do is put a W on the board. Against South Carolina, Dabo likes to run the score up. And against a few other schools, too. NC State. A couple other ones. Dabo likes to run up the score. And also, there was a little bit of that little old Clemson where the underdog kind of thing, you know, even when we're favored by 30 against teams.
Yeah.
I don't think you have that in this game. I think Dabo plays it smart. I think he develops a comfortable lead, gets Trevor Lawrence out, puts Chase Bryce in and a few other backups in, and just rides a comfortable victory just knowing that, hey, we're going to be in the playoffs. Let's not get hurt. I don't think if we were on the outside looking in, we'd cover that 28 points all day long. I think, you know, we get the style points going in, but no, give me Clemson to win this one easily 35-10, but 28 is too much.
That's about right.
How about Georgia LSU? We know this game is in Atlanta. This is the 3:30 game, if I'm not mistaken. LSU is a 7-point favorite. What do you think, Blake?
Give me LSU to win and cover. Georgia's got a good defense, and they'll be ready to play this game. I just don't think they have enough ammo for LSU. I really don't. I think he'll slow down Burrow some, but I think he'll make enough plays, and they might make a few big plays. And I don't know that Georgia has enough offense to keep up. I just don't know that they do, especially without having Cager. That's a big loss. I mean, Cager was a big loss for Georgia. And without Cager, and is Swift, is he healthy?
I don't know.
He was banged up in, was it the Georgia Tech game? And then also, the guy who threw the punch, is he going to miss half this game too?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think he is.
Pickens, the receiver, who is, by the way, their second best receiver behind Cager. I think he's out for the first half of this game, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he is, yeah.
So with that in mind, give me LSU 31-17. I like them to win in cover.
Yep, I got a similar score. I got LSU 34-17. I agree with you, Blake. I think Georgia's defense slows LSU down a little bit, but not enough. And they just don't have enough offensively. Maybe they'll give Fromm the keys, and maybe he'll put something together, but nothing sustainable, I think, for Georgia. Even though this will be essentially be a home game. Well, I say that, Blake. I think LSU will show out big time for
this game. I think it's going to be 50-50.
Although I've read a lot of people think fans. A lot of people think that LSU, since they're a lock for the playoffs, a lot of people are going to hang on to their money and instead of traveling to Atlanta for this game, wait for the first round of the playoffs, which is either going to be Phoenix or it's going to be Atlanta for LSU. And go to that instead. I think there are enough LSU fans to go around either way.
I'm the same way. I think there's enough fans where they'll actually fill it up all. I'm actually every chance they get. So, yeah. But I mean, you against Georgia, LSU. Georgia without Cager and without Pickens for the first half, I think LSU can be very aggressive in stopping the run because they have good corners. Stingley and Fulton are two very good corners, both NFL guys. I think they can lock up Georgia's receivers and be very conscious of stopping the run and really stymie their offense. And then, and of course, their offense will. I think Georgia will do well, but I think LSU will make enough plays, like we said, to get over the hump. But
yep, fair enough. It
should be a fun game.
I think so too. I think the spectacle will be fun to see all the LSU fans there, for the first time in a long time. It's been a few years since they've been there. So, all right, Blake, this was fun. Nice extended episode. We may do a coaching carousel episode next week at some point. Listeners, we will be back before the bowls. We'll do our bowl episode, which I always look forward to. That's probably my favorite, actually, of the year because there's always so many interesting matchups, and you don't have a clue, picking against the spread. It's hard enough picking straight up in bowls, much less against the spread.
In coaching bowls is psychology.
I know, and coaching changes.
It's factors, and, a team's, I don't want to go there. We should be in this bowl. We're in this bowl, and they're playing a team who they're better than, but that team is up to be in that bowl. That stuff means a lot, man.
And this team's got an interim coach, and this team's got a player who's sitting out because they want to go to the draft. And this team, so many things going on. The dynamics are so much more of a factor in a bowl game than any other game. So we're looking forward to that. We'll be back with that in a week or two, certainly before bowl season starts. But in the meantime, listeners, let us know what you think. BlakeandGreg@yahoo.com. In the meantime, enjoy championship weekend. Enjoy the conference championships. We will as well. Blake, it was fun, brother. We'll see you soon. We'll next couple of weeks we'll get together and we'll do bowls and maybe a coaching episode.
Yep, you definitely need to do that.
All right, listeners, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you guys very soon.